will make the magic in the stadium that hosts the Super Bowl 30 nights from tonight. The Stars, Kansas State has one, L. Roberson. He might be the best running quarterback in America. No one ran down more quarterbacks than that man, Terrell Suggs. The nation's sack leader hopes to get his shots tonight. Close, always high scoring, the Pacific Life Holiday Bowl. The 25th edition brings us the number six team in the country, the Wildcats from Kansas State. 9 points from a perfect season against the third place team from the Pac-10, Arizona State. Good evening, everyone. We welcome you to what is always the best of the pre-New Year's Day bowl games, and the Big 12 rep held up its part. Kansas State's the best team not playing in the bowl championship series so close to a perfect season. The Pac-10 team couldn't hold up its end of the bargain for the great pregame matchup because Arizona State was in a league where Washington State and Southern Cal went to the bowl championship series. It's a young program on the rise led by Dirk Cutter. They know they're the biggest underdog of bowl season. But on the other side is Kansas State. Bill Snyder's great program has never finished in the top five. They'll probably do that if they win tonight. But they also know that they laid an egg in the bowls two of the last 4 years. They play with more pressure tonight. Kirk Herbstreit, Lee Corso, as we talk about this game going in, let's look at both teams. Start with K-State.
Well, Mike, first year defensive coordinator for Kansas State, Bob Elliott has done a tremendous job with them. Kansas State's number one in total defense and scoring defense. And the number one player on this team is a defensive coordinator named Terrence Newman. Now, Terrence Newman is the best corner in all America when it comes to cover receivers. He's the Big 12 sprint champion. And, Kirk, I think he can cover anybody in America, and he's going to have a battle with this little guy, Sean McDonald from Arizona State can fly.
All right, welcome in. KSO Classic, Mason Voth, Drew Galloway with you as we take a look at the 2002 Pacific Life Holiday Bowl. You know we are big fans of Pacific Life on this show, always bringing it with their game summaries, and we got to see that in this game. This was one that I was pretty passionate about doing because you see there's good scoring. K-State had to make a little bit of a comeback, and as we find out as we get into this, it's like basically every other game from this era that we watched through. It's like it's really sloppy for about 40% of the game, but then there's 60% of it where K-State really needs to turn it on. And the defense does a lot of the heavy lifting in the turning it on category and providing the 60% that isn't sloppy. The offense at times could just be a little chuck and duck, and that's, you know, part of what the era is. But we get a look at K-State and Arizona State where, I mean, we'll talk about a couple of the things that you could already tell from the open about how it worked out, but K-State getting screwed by the BCS or the College Football Playoff Committee when they maybe deserve to go to a better bowl game. And then also everybody acts like the Lee Corso thing's new. He was struggling in this game 23 years ago. So I don't know. I've got Lee Corso hot takes for you that I was not prepared to give. We'll get into them later on in the show. But Drew, what were the initial thoughts from K-State, Arizona State in the Holiday Bowl?
Yeah, this was a game that I really wanted to do too. If you really go back and like look at the games that we've picked, it's all been games that like we weren't like super old and like could form memories from, or as it was the case last week, we just weren't old enough, we weren't alive yet. So this was one that was high on my list. I have like vague memories of this game. More than anything, like from the game, I remember that my parents had like a watch party for this game. So like I remember that, but don't remember like specifics from the game. It was very sloppy, as just kind of was the era of how they ran offense back then. Was never like a smooth operation. This was definitely like an era where you ran the ball and or you threw it deep, and there was no in between. So with that, it was just kind of fun, and I'm kind of with you on some of the Lee Corso hot takes, but as kind of we get into what our announcer score was, like all the other things, everything else kind of made up for it. at least in my eyes. I'm a big Mike Tirico guy, so like getting to hear Mike Tirico call a K-State game was fun. And then just how young Kirk Herbstreit was kind of like, it was like a jump scare when they went to the booth. I think that both of those guys were like early 40s when this game kicked off.
Oh, Kirk would have been younger than that, right? I mean, in this game, Kirk would have been, let's see, Herbstreit would have only been 33 when this game took place.
I think it was Tirico that was like early 40s.
Yeah, let's see. Actually, yeah. No, he would have been 36, right around there. Just turned 36 because he was born December 13th, 1966. So there you go. A fresh 36. Yeah. Well, he still had hair.
And just hearing those guys call a K-State game, even though they were so young and it was so long ago, like, it feels the opposite of how last week did hearing Tim Brando.
Yeah.
Like, this is one that was like, huh, this is pretty cool. That, like, especially with the lead into the game of K-State's the biggest favorite of all of bowl season, but they still got this broadcasting crew, was pretty fun.
Yeah. We'll get into a lot of that stuff from today. You mentioned how sloppy it was at times, and that's just kind of how the offense rolled. This was a real graphic put up at one point during the game of L. Roberson's stats, which is a pretty good encapsulation of where things are at. 4 of 18 for 103 yards with 3 minutes left to play in the third quarter at one point. Another thing that I want to highlight early on going into this is, look at that. The last 48 seasons before Bill Snyder came, 116 wins in K-State football, and it took him only 13 years to tie that number at 116. Pretty incredible. He got to that 116th win with this victory over Arizona State that we are going to get ready to talk about. Let's start with discussing our uniform matchup, how we would grade this thing out. It's pretty low for me on this one, 5.3. You know I'm a sucker for the road whites with the silver, white, silver, I think is phenomenal. I think Sparky on the Arizona State helmet is the way to go. That should be the main logo, not the pitchfork. My biggest issue, though, is that the uniforms flat sucked for Arizona State. Those were atrocious to look at. But, you know, it's Adidas serving up dog crap in the early 2000s, so I shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, this was like a 4.9 for me. In terms of uniforms, it just was not a great matchup. Arizona State's uniforms haven't changed like a ton color-wise, but they look so much better. They look a lot crisper now than they did back then.
They have some character to them and not just, you know, ugly, kind of maroon, kind of brown with, you know, it's more of a puke yellow that they were using in this era than a gold.
100%. Like it looks pretty gross.
Well, you mentioned you think you were at like a watch party. You have any memories of that? Because here's the only thing that I know. My family was also at a watch party. I think we were in Bueller at people's house, and my parents had gotten me a Holiday Bowl shirt that year. So I had a shirt somewhere that had the Power Cat and Sparky on it. So that's about all I can remember from this. And also that was probably like the first recollection of like like going to a watch party and thinking, oh, this is pretty sweet. Like you just walk around and football's on and you're playing and there's just food openly there that your parents aren't really monitoring how much you're taking in. That's probably what I can recall from this, was my viewing experience, which nothing about the game. I just knew I had a shirt and I had a lot of food at my disposal, as a 4.5-year-old.
Yeah, I don't really remember anything from like the party specifically, but I will throw in like a take here about watch parties. Watch parties great when you're like a kid or middle school, high school. Now, if I'm watching games though, like there can only be like 4 or 5 people.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's
like I can't watch a game in a big group of people anymore.
Well, because there are too many variables. You bring in too many people that I would put in the non-ball knower category. And, you know, you could be in a watch party of two and the other person, you're like, oh, this is miserable. And then, like, you know, there was a time where I got to the stage pretty early on, probably like middle school, where I was done watching games in the same, I love her, but I was done watching games in the same room as my mom. I just couldn't do it. 2010 basketball against Texas, I was in the basement by myself. 2014 and 15 Royals playoffs, I was in the basement by myself. You know, same, sometimes happens with my wife. I'm like, you know, like the road trips that I haven't gone on the last few years, like Iowa State in 2022 or West Virginia last year, I tried really hard to work my way to be like, I'm just going to go watch in the office. And, you know, I'm working. Couldn't do it. And it's like, man, big mistake. Wish I would have. But on the flip side, like when there's lower stakes attached to it, like, you know, the Rate Bowl this past year, my parents and my youngest brother, they came over because it was the day after Christmas or whatever. So everybody's around. And, you know, that was fine. Like pretty low key, whatever, just kind of meander. And when the game's as silly as the Rate Bowl was this year, I don't know that it really matters as much. But yes, watch parties, can't do them. You got to keep that number small and really to a tight circle of people that, you know, you can either trust, or even if you're mad at them, tough stuff because it's your mom or your wife or whoever.
In college, we'd have like people come in and we'd have NFL Red Zone on and the Chiefs on and another game on because we had three TVs in our room at the frat house at K-State. And I would hate NFL Sundays because I felt like I could never get anything done or really pay attention or watch games because there'd be like 15 people in our room. And that was too many for me.
I also could never get anything done on NFL Sundays, but that's because I was procrastinating just watching the games and worrying about my fantasy football team. I did most of my freshman year and occasionally like my sophomore year, I would drive to Council Grove and go watch the games with my grandparents. And that was a much better experience because that was like, my grandma doesn't really care. My grandpa would just be sitting there in his chair. So we'd sit there for hours watching. And then they would always, every weekend, it's like, what do you want for lunch? So I got to dictate what they cooked for lunch. And I'd leave at like halftime of the Sunday night football game or something after saying, and I should probably leave as soon as this one ends. And it's like, don't really want to get on the road yet. So, those are good memories. Good watch parties there. Bad watch parties, a lot of people, wild cards, can't deal with it. Let's jump into this game and take a look at the starting lineups for K-State in this one. You see here are the running backs and receivers for K-State. Everybody knows Darren Sproles. I don't think that's Darren Sproles.
I don't think so either.
Travis Wilson, Taco Wallace, James Terry, and Thomas Hill. Right there for you. And then here is the offensive line. Thomas Barnett, Nick Leckie, Steve Washington, Mike Johnson, and Billy Miller. As you can see, a lot of Texas flair here, and we'll get into that a little bit more. Here's the defensive line. Andrew Scholl, Tank Reese, Justin Montgomery, Henry Bryant. And then here are the linebackers. Brian Hickman, Terry Pierce, Josh Buell, the three nasty Texans there for everybody to see. And then the secondary for K-State, Jerry McLeod, Rashad Washington, Bobby Walker, and Terrence Newman. So basically, if you weren't from Kansas or Texas, take a hike, says Bill Snyder. I don't want you, is how this ends up working out. Let's dive into just kind of the recap and the flow of the game. It was no scoring in the first quarter, no scoring in the third quarter in this one. So if you're looking for significant plays, K-State thought that they got one early in the game. This is after both teams had already traded punts. Here is Bobby Walker doing what he did best in the 2002 season, taking the ball away from the opponent on one of the stranger looking picks. Now, folks, if you hate the way that the highlights are shown this week, that's on me. I thought that maybe I was doing something that would make it easier or, you know, somewhat better. We'll see how it ends up going. These, instead of me like ripping them, I've just clipped them from YouTube. We'll see how it goes. I'm more worried about it than you guys probably are. Here is Bobby Walker's interception early in the first quarter for K-State.
Indiana pulled some great basketball.
Second and nine. Walter put some air under it. Intercepted by Bobby Walker. Oh, you can see the receiver Skyler Fulton pulled up.
So Bobby Walker gets a takeaway there, and you're probably thinking to yourself, hey, this is looking good. Like, here come the Cats, going to do something with it. They didn't. That continued to kind of be a trend throughout the entirety of this game, as not much could actually be done. But you had to wait till you got to the second quarter where things started to flow for K-State a little bit more. And that's where we got introduced to Terrence Newman begging and pleading for more offensive opportunities for K-State this season. And for whatever reason, Bill Snyder decided, yeah, let's do it. Holiday Bowl, go for it. Last game ever at K-State, why not? And it obviously benefited K-State greatly. This is Terrence Newman's first catch, which then sets up another big play for the Wildcats.
Second and seven, Roberson to throw. It's protected, shot downfield for Newman. So Terrence Newman, who caught one ball this year in the very first game of the season, begging to get on the field offensively at different points this year, does here in game 36.
Well, he told us in Orlando at the awards show, I got to get more involved with the offense. He messes around in practice once in a while. You can see the speed that he has going right by R.J. Oliver, and he just kind of stuck onto the field. Nobody even saw it. Second and six, he came off the sideline and just lined up out there at wide receiver and went right around Oliver for a big gain. And that's what they needed to do, take some of the pressure off of L. Roberson in this offense.
Stems the momentum a little bit. Sproles now giving some space. Spinning and moving. Sproles on his way to the end zone. Touchdown, KSU. Bang, bang. 43-41. The yards on back-to-back play.
So you get a pretty classic Darren Sproles run off the end of it, and that's how K-State gets on the board for the first time in this game. What did you make of that string of plays that we just saw there, Drew? The Newman catch, getting him out on offense, and then Darren Sproles just needing basically one really elite move, and then there's nobody else there to stop him.
Yeah, I think that the first takeaway from that is that was the perfect time to get Newman in the game because the offense at that point was, I think that right before that play began, or it was like the right before the drive began, Mike Tirico says like K-State's averaging like getting a foot per play, not a yard, a foot per play. And then Newman comes on the field and they take a shot deep. And number one, great route by Terrence Newman. And then a great throw by L. And then you get the Darren Sproles big run afterwards. Again, this is where, like, sometimes I wish that we brought on somebody that, like, probably watched the game live and has a lot more memories than us, because if I was watching that live, I would think, okay, now K-State's just gonna, like, probably kick Arizona State's ass. Like, it took them a little bit to get, like, woken up and to really, like, figure it out, but, like, you have those two huge plays by your two best players, and you think, okay, we're probably off to the races now, but they weren't.
Yeah, they certainly were not, because the next thing we're going to show you, K-State is down 17-7 getting late in the second quarter, and they have the ball. K-State's been backed up in bad field position all game long, and Bill Snyder made a comment about it at halftime of this game about how defense is actually playing really well, just the offense is giving them no field to work with. And it got made a whole lot worse when a guy that typically you're relying on and not expecting something bad to happen to allows something bad to happen. So here is Darren Sproles trying to get K-State out of a sticky situation and making things much worse.
That play properly. Second and seven. Sproles through the defense. Ball came out. They say no. Down. He's a live football. And it's recovered by Arizona State. We thought it was down for a second, but they said no, that ball was live, and it was a fumble. Arizona State had it. The ball came out again after that, but it is ASU ball. Recovered by Brett Hudson, the quarterback.
Darren Sproles is trying to do.
So I held on to it a little bit there because I wanted everybody to see the look that they got of Bill Snyder. The non-PC way to describe that would be the thing that got the Cleveland Guardians broadcaster in trouble. I think multiple times he said it where, you know, you would do not very nice things to yourself. A better way to phrase it would be Bill Snyder looked like he wanted to die in that moment. Like, you're already down 17-7. They were already talking about it before the game. The notion of K-State laying eggs in bowl games was already starting to come about. And here you are, your best player, who you're not necessarily expecting this to happen to, coughs up the ball inside the red zone for your opponent, and they are going to attack and be able to extend their lead a little bit. But I just, that whole sequence, like, that's a, you talk about, oh, you're thinking K-State's going to roll now. I can guarantee you, you're sitting here in this spot, you're like, oh, Jesus, here we go. Once again, we've got Alamo Bowl in 98 or the Insight Bowl last year. Like, it's just, you know, going to show up and take a whooping and nobody cares. And this is gross.
Yeah, I drew actually a parallel from this game to a game that, you know, we saw last year. This first half and kind of how the game played out was pretty eerily similar to like K-State at BYU this past season, where it felt like everything that could go wrong went wrong, except the difference was K-State's defense made huge plays in this game to keep Arizona State to kicking field goals, instead of like last year at BYU, K-State's defense didn't step up in those times and allowed BYU to score touchdowns. Because the fact that Arizona State had to kick a field goal there and had to kick a field goal when they were in the red zone earlier in the game, absolutely massive when you get down to the stretch, because the defense just kept K-State's offense in it just enough for them to finally wake up, and then they ended up winning.
It's also kind of like, you know, if the offense had done anything in the 2023 Oklahoma State game, because that defense was in bad field position all game long, and they held those State to field goal after field goal. But yes, in a tough spot. And K-State down 20-7 with about a minute to go in the half, and it had Lee Corso asking big brain questions in the booth that Kirk Herbstreit wanted none of. So here is Lee Corso begging the question, should K-State go to Mark Dunn over L. Roberson?
The long field for K-State with 80 seconds to go.
One thing also, remember, on the second unit, there's a kid named Mark Dunn, number 5, 6'4", 205, and throws the football very, very well. In case they can't come back, this guy has been able to throw the football and might be the spark that they need to look at in the second half. I would not be surprised if Bill Snyder doesn't put him in the game somewhere in the third quarter.
Dunn's the better passer to your college transfer, who was the starter when the season began, and they are certainly what they do most comfortably when Roberson's under center. We still have time here, down 13. Looks to be offside from Arizona State. Suggs may have a false started there coming out of the blocks.
Way, way early to think about that. I mean, if they're able to score a touchdown, they're within one possession.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, voice of reason, Kirk Herbstreit takes over there, and he's like, I don't know. I don't know that you want Mark Dunn coming into the game. You're only down 13. He obviously knows K-State could probably score pretty quick.
I don't think that Tirico wanted Mark Dunn to come in either, but, like, Tirico's not really in a spot where you could be like, no.
That's true. Well, don't worry about Mark Dunn, Lee, because Kirk Herbstreit was right. K-State was able to move down the field, and this is just 17 seconds later of game time after Lee Corso says you might want to think about putting Mark Dunn into the game. L. Roberson says, shut up, old man.
David Dennis, wide receiver, freshman, is in the game. One of the three Roberson's looking for. Got away from Suggs. This is where he's good. Roberson on the run. Touchdown. 32 yards. Doesn't matter who the teams are, boys. Oh. It's the Holiday Bowl. Give them a chance. They kick in.
Also, somebody let out a little laugh there. I would like to just assume that was either Tirico or Kirk laughing at Lee Corso for suggesting that you go to Mark Dunn, and then you see L. Roberson do that. Yes.
I am not meant to be an announcer for a myriad of reasons. But number one would be because if I was Kirk Herbstreit, I would have just looked at Lee Corso and said it on air. Mark Dunn isn't doing that.
Yeah, then, or just double birds to him or something. You're like, you're an idiot, old man. Here we go. People are gonna hate the Lee Corso slander in this, but I'm not holding back. I'm sick of pretending that Dick Vitale was great to listen to. No, most annoying human on TV. Lee Corso, his spot was college game day. I don't know that we needed him on game broadcast for what he brought to the table. Anyways, K-State goes down 2014 at halftime. This was Bill's halftime interview as he was walking to the locker room with Dr. Jerry Punch, who you might remember we've seen already a couple times in this series, might see him some more. So here is Bill Snyder with the Dr. Jerry Punch.
Leave the field as one. Jerry Punch.
Talking along with Coach Snyder. Coach, very atypical of your guys, sluggish at the start. Are you concerned or frustrated a little bit about how you got started tonight?
Well, we haven't played very well on offense, and Arizona State has played very well on defense and really has kind of taken us out of our game, so to speak. Not allowed us, given us the opportunity to run the ball. Now we're throwing it a little bit, but we just have to have some consistency with our offense. Our defense is not playing poorly. We just the offense has just given up great field position, and we haven't punted the ball very well. Those things have to take place in the second half. Okay, thanks, Coach. Michael?
The losses were to Colorado and Texas. Chris Fowler last year, no points in the first quarter, 37 in the second. This year, no points in the first quarter of the Pacific Life Holiday Bowl, 34 in the second quarter.
So there you go. That is what took place at halftime. And to make note of this, so K-State gives up 20 points in the second quarter of this game. K-State had only, in their last 50 quarters, had five such occasions where they had given up 10 or more points, and then they gave up 20 in this second quarter. So they go to half, 20-14 is the score. I'll share some halftime thoughts later on from the halftime show. I thought Trev Alberts was actually a star on that halftime show. Did you watch the halftime show at all?
I watched a little bit of it. Once they started talking about the other games, I stopped caring, though.
Fair. Very fair. All right. So we come out, third quarter, all this stuff. And again, third quarter is going to be really boring. Nothing exciting happens in terms of good exciting. But well, you didn't, one positive play.
We do have that graphic of the L. Roberson stats. That did happen in the third quarter.
This did happen. What we're about to show you comes just before this, though, about 9 minutes of game time earlier. This is, to me, the best play of the game. It doesn't do anything for anything, but I loved it. I'd watch it over and over again, and we'll set up questions on it later. But Terrence Newman getting his crack on offense, and Bill Snyder occasionally trying to make some fun happen, went for a trick play.
That's why the rule was made. If you're top four, you automatically get in. This year, they're 10-2 like USC, beat USC head-to-head, but because Southern California was top four BCS, they're in. Newman thinking about throwing. Instead, he will keep it and run. Actually, he wanted the reverse. Huge speed for Newman to midfield, 30 yards. He's touched the ball twice on offense. Two huge games.
So, I mean, just two awesome plays that we've seen so far from him on offense. And the fact that, I mean, it was a broken play and he just scoots by and he's out there for what, 25, 30 yards that he's able to pick up there. That is my favorite play from this game. And in terms of looking at like a like the most impressive play, I would give it to that moment from Terrence Newman.
It is, I think, the most impressive play. I don't think that it's probably one of my favorite plays from this game, but it's not what I have for best play of the game.
Fair. Let me show you my candidate for worst play of the game, Drew. Not good, because it would have been a game changer for excitement, for the score, for everything. 3rd and 8, late in the third quarter, K-State once again backed up deep in their own territory. And we know L. Roberson is not connecting on a lot of throws. So when one is even in the vicinity of a receiver's hands, you would like for them to catch it. Not the case for James Terry.
The history of the sport, stats or no. Roberson, time, man breaks free. It's James Terry. Can't hold on.
Brutal. absolutely brutal there for K-State to not be able to connect on that one.
For how good James Terry was in the 0-3 Nebraska game, for how good that we know James Terry was really for all of 0-3, he was terrible in this game.
Yeah, not a great game for him. We jump ahead. This is after now they have shown this graphic. Not a great look there. Tough. That's
yards per completion. That's incredible.
That's true. Over 25. You take that any day of the week. K-State is starting to move the ball a little bit. They are near midfield. This is also a very impressive play from the skill standpoint. Don't mind the fact that ESPN decided that they needed to make the score updates 1/8 of the screen that you're going to see here. But L. Roberson makes some magic happen. And again, as you said earlier, Drew, I don't think Mark Dunn could do this. So here is L. Roberson making some things happen.
Now, we know your pops. We know different. We know you can throw it all right before you got there. Roberson can throw it. He's going to take off. Now pump and throw. It's caught by Evans. He danced around that line of scrimmage and was able to get rid of it.
Very, very close.
I thought it was past the line. To be honest, I did.
Yes.
Well, if L. Roberson, when he came to the outside, if he would have had a chance to peek up at Evans early.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. He would have been able to find. Look, Evans is coming right across the field. Nobody is with him. And I know that Roberson's doing everything he can to survive back there, and it's easier from up here, but he had him wide open.
So you see there, I mean, that was very clearly committed to running the ball there, it looked like, and just flings it out at the last second. Also, I mean, what were they looking at there? It was not anywhere close to being – an illegal forward pass, but that ultimately moved K-State down the field. They set things up, they're moving, and they're ready to finally score as the fourth quarter has just gotten underway, and they go to a classic Bill Snyder offensive play to try and score in the red zone. It's a quarterback sneak from 3 yards out, so not necessarily a sneak, more of like a, I don't know what the step up from a sneak is, but here is L. Roberson's rushing touchdown.
That's why I like the option of fake the rollout, put the ball in Roberson's hands.
See, Nick Vick in thick backfield, play 16 of the drive. Is Roberson keeping? Touchdown, Kansas State. The drive two in the Holiday Bowl.
So there is L. Roberson with a 3-yard quarterback sneak. What do you think of a play like that? How much heat would a coach get today if they tried something like that?
Well, if it works like that, probably none. This era of offense, though, was just wild to watch again. Like, another parallel from another game that we watched during this KSO Classic. Remember that first drive that K-State had in the 0-3 Nebraska game? K-State ran a quarterback sneak on 2nd and 6 on the first drive of the game. Like, they were not afraid to just whip out a quarterback sneak from like 3 or 4 to even 6 yards out and get the first down. Like, it, I don't understand how it worked so well in that era to get like lots of yardage on a QB sneak.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy, but you know, if it's going to get you yards, I guess you do it. And that one stood out to me. I was like, oh, they just, 3-yard line, quarterback sneak, whatever. Now it's like quarterback sneak. You're lucky if you get half a foot on those, unless you're the Philadelphia Eagles. They could probably do it all the way down the field, but we know they're cheating on it. False starts galore and all that stuff. We'll just watch Lane Johnson. That guy's always beaten the football in a race. So anyways, we'll move past that and my Eagles hate. Here is another play from the game. You mentioned James Terry. There were some struggles. Well, K-State is down again, 27-20, about 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter because, as you could pick up, Arizona State struck rather quickly after this. This was one of the more fascinating and just, I don't know, I called it funky at first, but then I think like maybe it's the way that slants are just supposed to work. Like they did it to perfection. Here is L. Roberson connecting with James Terry on it just was kind of an odd looking play to my eyes, but it worked out beautifully for K-State.
The head coach worked with the quarterback. He turns the defense over to a guy he's been with for a half dozen years. Yep. Great guy. Roberson, good throw to James Terry in a foot race. Terry across midfield, brought down at the 45-yard line. So K-State responds 32 yards on that one.
No, against man coverage, everybody at the line of scrimmage. They've tried to fade route to Newman. They've tried to fade route to Taka Wallace and Jason Terry. Another good route.
Oh, Jason Terry. How about that? Shout out to Mavs legend Jason Terry from Kirk.
Oliver makes it look funky because he just runs straight back. It was a great call because K-State had just been throwing go balls, and that's why L was 4 of 18 at one point. But I think that's what made it look funky.
That they all just kept running like diagonal with each other. There was no attempt to actually try and like make it a true like north-south type of run. It was just, okay, my route is taking me this way. The ball is going this way. We're just going to keep going. And then, yeah, everybody else was like, yeah, we're going to keep running like this as well.
Yeah, it was a very bizarre play. I actually had that written down as something that, like, I'm kind of confused about what exactly went down there.
All right, so game progresses on. The drive keeps going. K-State needing a score to try and make things happen in this game as they are down with 7.5 minutes left. And they are facing a 4th and 10. And to set the stage for this, it's a big play because K-State has already wasted 2 timeouts on this play. And here are the Wildcats on 4th and 10 around the 22, 23-yard line. And L. Roberson kind of just throws up a prayer and it gets answered.
We come up short. They come back to different personnel. Newman's in the game. James Terry's the other receiver. The tight end Hill is in there. Two backs, Scrolls and Wilson. 4th and 10. ASU heats it up. Roberson puts it up for grabs for Terry, who was going to caught the ball. The 1st and goal, Kansas State at the 1.
Oh, man.
Tell you what, he was held. Yeah. As you say, he was really held. The fact that he was able to get there. Al Roberson dropped back, bought some time, and just threw it into the corner.
There you go. K-State, they would have gotten a first down on it anyways because of the holding penalty, but a whole lot better because you ended up getting the catch, and you're right there next to the end zone. And so K-State, once again, they snuck it in. Pretty simple score there to tie it.
Couple things there. Number one, you can tell that, again, pre-snap wasn't exactly L's best trait as a quarterback because he didn't shift the line. So just a dude from Arizona State comes in just completely unblocked and gets in there. Number two, and I'm surprised that you didn't mention this because you said you got a lot of Lee Corso hot takes. Coming into this play before K-State called their first timeout, Lee Corso is talking about how they should be kicking a field goal. And I'm like, dude, there's 7 minutes left. A field goal, zero.
And in the same stretch, these guys have a conversation about how uncharacteristic this is for K-State because they also call a timeout later on an Arizona State drive in this game. And the K-State's used all three of their timeouts in situations that you go, what are you doing? Because K-State had to use a timeout on an Arizona State punt that was coming up later on. And it's like, actually, this is the most characteristic thing I've seen from this game. I don't know if this was just like kind of one-off occasions in Snyder 1.0, but this kind of crap became commonplace in 2.0 where you're calling timeouts or you're having clock problems. Anyways.
Yeah, like the fact that they called a timeout to set up the 4th down play, came out in a formation, called timeout again, and, like, you still had Lee Corso saying that they should be kicking a field goal. Like, dude, no. Crazy. 7 minutes left. Arizona State couldn't run the ball for anything in this game. So, like, K-State was probably going to get the ball back if they kicked a field goal. But you know what I think about field goals when you're, like, you're down 7. Like, it that does nothing for you. Like, congrats. You made it a 4-point game. You still need a touchdown.
Let's go and take a look at a defensive highlight in this game. They were great all game, but it was like boring great. There's just nothing was happening for Arizona State except when they got good field position. This was a crucial play. First and 10, about 6 minutes left to play in the game. K-State now tied with Arizona State, and they are able to come through, and they force a big sack.
Let me tell you something.
And that 4 for 6 for 60.
Let me quote Santana Moss. Big-time players make big plays in big games.
Especially
he just did.
Especially if they're lucky.
From the 37, pocket collapses. Walters brought down. Sacked by Justin Montgomery, who we thought we'd see a little more on tonight. Second and 16 coming up.
I think people who just tuned in, they see 27-27. People might be thinking, boy, Kansas State, they probably showed up flat like they did in 98 when they had to go to the Alamo Bowl. No, no. Kansas State showed up ready to play. It's just the team that they're playing tonight also showed up ready to play. I don't want to hear excuses of Kansas State. They were disappointed because they weren't involved in the BCS. That's why the game's close. Arizona State came.
So there was a I thought, one of the better plays defensively in the game, Justin Montgomery sack. Just forcing his way like a bulldozer through the Arizona State offensive line to get back there. It ultimately set up Arizona State having to give the ball back to K-State. And we'll give love to another guy that probably typically doesn't get it. You know, sometimes defensive linemen get overlooked. Fullbacks, they also get overlooked. I thought this was one of the more significant plays in deciding the outcome. About 3.5 minutes left in the game. K-State is right around midfield. They're going to face a 3rd-and-2, 3rd-and-3 situation. They probably could go for it if they wanted to on 4th down, but you might as well get it on 3rd, and what a run by Travis Wilson you're about to see.
Like to me, went back and ran it automatic because the blocking looked like a draw. Good call by Ron Hudson. 3rd-and-2.
Right in the belly of the fullback, who kept the play alive. And Travis Wilson gets a first down.
Just pure strength right there by him on the initial hit. He gets through it and turns, and then he's fighting even more there. I thought that was a significant pickup in the game. K-State eventually gets it down into a goal-to-go situation, and you're thinking, minute 24 left, like there's a lot of time here. Maybe make Arizona State use their timeouts. You've got Darren Sproles, like take this thing down. No, 1st and goal from the 9. K-State said, we're just going to try and end this thing right here. And whether it was great play calling or ill-advised, L. Roberson rifles one to the end zone on 1st and goal.
Because K-State's going to run this down to the nub unless they pound it in.
Yep.
Trying for the go-ahead score. Roberson to throw. It's caught. Touchdown, Derek Evans.
So there you go. That is the touchdown that gave K-State the lead, and they ultimately would go on to win after Arizona State's noodle arm quarterback couldn't even throw it 50 yards on a Hail Mary at the end of the game. Meanwhile, you're sitting there, and what, last week we get to hear the story about Michael Bishop throwing it 93 yards in the air or something. Arizona State's trotting out a dude that he can barely get it over 45, and K-State ends up winning the game by a score of 34-27. So the Holiday Bowl, a winner for K-State. We can now get into our categories, but first want to remind everybody that you can still go to cats2ireland.com to make sure you get everything squared away to make your trip to the Emerald Isle for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic as good as it needs to be. Travel, hospitality, tickets, all the information you need about what's going to happen in less than a month in Ireland is there for you at cats2ireland.com. Drew, your trivia question for today. K-State had played in 2 previous Holiday Bowls before this one. Who did they play in those 2 games?
This is a good question. And now I'm trying to think of where I want to go here, because this is also, you got to think like realignment. And that's like the hardest part of this. It's trying to think of like the conferences back then. I believe that K-State played Washington in 99.
They did. That would be Rick Neuheisel coached Washington.
Oh, of course. And then this is the tough one that I'm trying to remember, because this was like also like 95 range, like 96, 95. Was this also Washington?
No, this was Colorado State in 1995. Top 25 matchup in the Holiday Bowl. Number 10 K-State, number 25 Colorado State. K-State won that one 54-21. So not as close as the next two that K-State would play in it. But Holiday Bowl, my dad from time to time will talk about how he still wishes that the Holiday Bowl was a bowl tie-in that the Big 12 had. And yeah, I think it's probably just because K-State's 3-0 in the Holiday Bowl.
Get rid of the Liberty Bowl and add the Holiday Bowl back.
Yeah, and kick him to the curb. We'll see with realignment, like you talked about. You know, that was a Pac-12 tie-in still. Now you might be able to kind of siphon some of that when they realign in a few years. What, next year they're probably working on new tie-ins, I would imagine, how that works. So, I don't know. We'll see how it works for K-State and where they might go.
This is also something that I'm going to look into, like, after we record. I'm fascinated by why K-State played Colorado State in 95 instead of a Pac-10 team.
Well, you know, they were a little more inclusive back in the day with when they were inviting teams, you know, giving everybody a chance in terms of, like, it was limited in how many teams played in bowls. So I think there were times where they would look around and say, oh, hey, we're going to give so-and-so a shot. So you got a top 25 Colorado State team. The Wyatt Thompson Bulls, some might call it. You would maybe see if you would throw Colorado State a bone. It did not work out. I bet Colorado State probably didn't get many more shots after that.
I bet they probably wish that they played in some other bowl.
Now, actually, the Holiday Bowl came back calling, and they gave Colorado State a bid in 1997, and we talked about this because Missouri lost to Colorado State this year. So 35-24. Let's see, the 2000 Liberty Bowl, they won that over Louisville. 2001 New Orleans Bowl, they won that over North Texas. 99 Liberty Bowl, they lost to Southern Miss. Tough. So there you go. There's a little rabbit hole there for you. And from 1990 to 2008, Colorado State racked it up. They went to 11 bowl games in that stretch, so pretty impressive. All right, that is the Aer Lingus trivia question for the week, and now we can get back into talking about the game and some of our categories. Best play, I already said that mine was the Terrence Newman. They had it set up to probably be a pass, but broken play, he turned it into a run. Yeah, not ultimately consequential in the end because it came in that scoreless third quarter, but I thought that was the most special play and my favorite from this game.
My best play, because of the circumstances and kind of what it led to, and then the 17 seconds before Lee Corso saying that Mark Dunn should come in as quarterback, is the L scramble before the half.
That's a good choice.
Special play, and just really showcased like how really supremely athletic that L was.
Yeah, no doubt. Worst play in the game. You said that you had one for this one. Was it the same as the James Terry drop that I picked out on 3rd and 8 in the third quarter that probably would have been a touchdown if he catches it, or did you have a different one?
Well, I have a different one because it's something that we can't just show because there's a lot going on my worst play. My worst play, I put literally any first down play in the first half. K-State averaged like losing a yard on first down in the first half.
That's okay. That I like that. That's a good analytical approach and just watching and going, oh, you know, first down, they've been really bad on. It didn't even trigger with me in this game. I was just like, yep, gross play.
The only reason it kept triggering with me was because of your guy, Lee, kept mentioning how bad K-State was on first down.
Well, hey, at least he did something right in this game. What aged well from this one? We can just go back and forth until we trade out of them. Mike Tirico and Kirk Herbstreit on the call of games. I mean, as you can see, Tirico's doing Sunday Night Football now, and Kirk Herbstreit is the number one college analyst for ESPN. So both of those guys, like, quality, great on games, and, you know, even if they have a bad game, you at least are going to get enjoyment out of that booth. Like, this was a fun listen. When you get Tim Brando, you're like, oh, even a good game from him isn't going to be fun to listen to. Bad games are going to be ear-bleedingly bad. But you're not going to get a bad, like, an overall bad one from Tirico and Herbstreit.
I had that down as well. I also have Chris Fowler as a host, because he was phenomenal as the host on their half.
You say that. I do have this for you, though. What do we think he was going for in this situation where it's trying out an accent? I wasn't so sure about it. This is Chris Fowler doing a little game break.
Well, we got bowl highlights, Mike. You don't want any part of playing Ole Miss and Shreveport. We'll have highlights of that game, plus Oklahoma State, an offensive show for Rashawn Woods. And we'll look ahead to the Alamo Bowl, the Badgers and the Buffaloes tomorrow. That's all coming up when Trev and Mark join me at the break.
Badgers.
All right, CF, we'll see you and the guys at halftime. Of course, Chris.
He went for it. Props to him for going for it there. You're right, though. Even in that, with he's trying to give some personality and some whatever, you can still tell that, like, he sounds great in that role. And that's no disrespect to Reese Davis, who I think is great or whatever. And, like, he's the icon for college basketball game day to me. But college game day was better when Fowler was hosting it. That's what felt like college game day.
And Fowler is, like, who we grew up with as the host of game day. So, like, so much easier to, like, pinpoint him as like the host of game day, like being such a good host.
Yeah. And like Fowler is fine on play by play, but I don't love him in that spot. A lot of times he can stick to doing tennis play by play, but as the number one college guy, that I was ready to go berserk in college when they were like, yeah, we're taking Musburger off of the number one game and we're demoting him to SEC Saturday nights. And now Fowler's getting to do the game because of some contractual guarantee that they gave there. That was upsetting to me. Another thing that aged well, because it would happen again after this, it already happened twice. This was the second instance. K-State getting screwed by the BCS or the College Football Playoff when it came time to decide who got to go to the marquee bowl games. You heard them in one of the earlier clips discussing that the K-State rule from 1998, where K-State finished number four in the BCS poll, but because of tie-ins and everything else, they had to go and play all the way down the Alamo Bowl instead of getting to play in one of the BCS games. And then this situation, they're number six and they're shut out of one of those games. And to make it even worse, USC, who they beat earlier in the season, was higher in the rankings and got to go to one of the BCS bowls. They talked in this one that USC and was it Washington was the other one. Washington State got that was probably Ryan Leaf.
Mm-hmm.
You got those two teams into BCS games, and K-State was kind of booted out and once again sent to something where, you know, fine game, but not to that level. And they had to play in the Holiday Bowl. That's where you look at, and where the argument becomes so silly about, you know, the KU side with the Orange Bowl, K-State's never won a BCS game. Well, yeah, but they won an Alliance game. They won the Fiesta Bowl. And a Fiesta Bowl against, like, Donovan McNabb, and not in one of the worst college football seasons of all time. But then you look around, K-State had teams finish fourth and sixth in the BCS rankings and not get to play in one of those games. Then go down the road. Was it 2014 season? I guess it probably would have been, where you look at the games there. I think that was a season where I remember going, K-State should have gotten into, one of the New Year's Six games in that first year of the playoff, and they didn't.
They didn't because TCU and Baylor got screwed out of the playoff. So K-State wasn't able to be a third Big 12 New Year's Six game.
Yeah.
Or New Year's Six team.
Yeah, because K-State finished number 11 in the polls that year. The let me see what the New Year's Six games in that year were. I think my issue was it Michigan maybe, or somebody had gotten into one that you just were like, what in the let's find the 2014. So you had now this was a requirement. Number 20 Boise State got in to face Arizona. Number 12 Georgia Tech was in the Orange Bowl to face Mississippi State. So that was probably the one where I think I got miffed at, is that why is Georgia Tech in this game? So
well, if TCU or Baylor makes the playoff, I think K-State is, because if I remember right, in the non-playoff New Year's Six Bowls, you could only have two teams in.
Yeah, that's probably accurate. So K-State
also screwed. Also in this, like, they essentially say that, like, K-State got screwed because of what happened in 98, which is very ironic.
Yeah, it's just, you know, fantastic.
Another thing that I have that aged well, because I'm going to let you take, I think, the one another one that we both have, but I'm going to take K-State and Arizona State playing. Like, it's just funny that, yeah, like, this is now a conference game, and in 02, it was never even, like, a thought or a question that this could be a conference game ever.
Yeah, I put down Bill slow starts, and it just, you know, it became a common thing. It obviously happened here, and then like the bowl game thing we discussed, were not always their best foot forward. Just kind of weird how they operated, and my what if that I'll bring up later highlights why they were able to overcome it and still be so great. But that was all I had down. So what was the one that you thought that I was going to take?
Oh, I thought that you were going to take the Pacific Live Holiday Bowl.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. This is what I think of when I think of sponsor for this game is Pacific Live.
Genuinely couldn't tell you who the Holiday Bowl sponsor is now.
It's DirecTV.
It's always Pacific Live to me.
Yeah. Yeah. K-State actually played in it. In only a 7-year stretch, they played in under three different sponsors: Pacific Life, Culligan, and Plymouth, which I don't even know what Plymouth is. So,
Plymouth Rock?
I do know. That's only crazy Plymouth knowledge I have. Culligan, you know, hey, Culligan, man. And then here we go, Holiday Bowl we're talking about. What aged poorly? Let's Lee Corso. Not, and I'm not even saying 23 years later from this game. I'm talking like minutes after it started, where he's just saying things where he's stumbling, he's not getting it right. It's just, I don't know. And also, Mike Tirico had a slip up over in the open where he said that Kansas State needed to start fast against the Wildcats or something. It happens. It sucks. It's not a fun experience to go through when you know that you screw up like that. It rattled him before the opening kick. You could tell with the way this broadcast started. But yeah, Lee Corso, not great on games. And I thought, going back to this, like, I knew this was an elite booth that they had, and I thought, oh, this is going to be fun to see Lee Corso in this. I ended it with going, yeah, he should have just only been on the game day desk, but it was still fun to have him there. Even if we laugh, and I, you know, his performance overall, he wasn't great.
Yeah, it probably should have been, like, looking back, just Tirico and Kirk and called it good. I have the San Diego Chargers as someone that aged poorly, and just Qualcomm in general. So that's where I'm starting.
I would throw in Bill's clock management in this game. In the first half, they had to use a timeout early to avoid a delay of game. That's a classic. And then we discussed in the second half, they used three timeouts on plays that were just totally unnecessary and made zero sense. And it's just like, why is this a thing? And it's because I know why it's a thing. It's because he was so detail oriented. Like, that's what the topic has been around him for so long, is that he probably thought that, like, the game could be made or broke on a play like that. So if you could put an end to it and you could try to make it better, you probably should. So
the next thing that I have is, you know, I'm all about the aesthetics and how you look in the uniform. James Terry wearing 82 in 02 did not age well, because he looked a lot better in 03 wearing number 5.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Did not like seeing the 82. That was kind of ugly. My next thing, and what aged poorly, Kirk's glasses and pleats in his wardrobe. You're talking about player aesthetics. I want to talk broadcaster aesthetics. The glasses, not a great look. And then pleats, they're just completely out of style for people. Not many pleated pants still roam in the world. It's like you watch, you know, golf from back in this era or even a little after that. And you see like, oh, there's a little more bagginess to some of the pants and they're kind of flaring out there. The pleats have gone by the wayside. So I threw that out there. This is my last age poorly.
My last age poorly was because they just kept gassing him up the whole broadcast. It felt like Dirk Cutter. Mm. He ends up getting fired from Arizona State like 3 years after this bowl game.
Well, then he also got a head coaching job in the NFL. So did he actually age poorly? Or
yes, because he also sucked in the NFL. They made it sound like he was going to be like the next big like head coach, and he was just okay.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Did he Arizona State really fired him?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Wow. Why would they have done that though? They were fine under him. I mean, because
remember in the broadcast they're talking about how much money they spent on this facility and they thought that they could be better than they had been. So they built this like multi-million dollar facility and had this young head coach, and then he just couldn't get them above 8 wins. And they fired him.
Hmm. Well, that's, I guess that's probably fair because the very next year, Dennis Erickson came in and they won the Pac-10 and were the number 13 team in the country. So fair. But then Dennis Erickson, 5-7, 4-8, 6-6. No, they still let him keep going, 6-7. And Todd Graham takes over. So there you go. All right. That's the update on Arizona State coaching. Broadcaster grades in this one. I know that I've said a lot about Lee Corso here. It doesn't matter. The sound of these guys, all three are big names. I gave it an A+. It's a fun booth to have for a bowl game. You know, get some fun thrown into there. Let these guys do a game every once in a while. I liked listening to this more than any other broadcast that we'd had so far.
Yeah, I give it an A. Didn't give it an A+, just because Lee Corso was kind of driving me crazy during the game. But I'll give it a solid A. Like, they were very, very good in this game, I thought.
Yeah, they were strong. Here's the toughest question of the game. Who was your MVP? Because L. Roberson, he got it from the broadcast, and I think he even got it for the offensive MVP in this game, but you can use your eyeballs and say, I don't really know that he earned that. But Darren Sproles is kind of like, eh, whatever. I think I'm going to give it to Terrence Newman, though.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're in agreement because I actually went back and forth on this for a long time about who I was going to pick as my MVP, but he was barely on the field offensively, but Terrence Newman is my call because he gave K-State a shot in the arm when they really needed it on offense. And then on defense, like, he was so good that I felt like Arizona State barely even went his way. So the fact that he was good enough on offense that you were like, oh, like, they should have been doing this more often. And then on defense, he was good enough that they didn't even really, like, look at him. That was good enough for him to be the MVP here because as good and well that L. Roberson numbers look, if you just look at yardage, because I'm staring at that 11 of 28 right now while I'm making this point. But if you just
look at this earlier.
Yes. If you just look yardage wise, his numbers look fine. It is weird. And I'm probably just a hater for saying this, but like two of his touchdowns were on QB sneaks. So like, yeah.
Yeah.
The touchdown run that he had at the end of the half was special. And then he had a good throw for his passing touchdown. But it's not like he really stood out. And kind of like 0-3 Nebraska, this was just kind of a fine Darren Sproles game. And just shows how good that he was. That he has 118 yards and a touchdown in this game. And we're like,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the mark of how good are you as a running back, where 118 yards feels pedestrian, but you still saw the special flashes. in this game. Newman led the team in tackles, the three catches, 47 yards, and then the 26 rushing yards on that one play that we discussed. I want to jump real quick and talk about the what-ifs from this game, because it ties into Terrence Newman. And I would say this: what if you played him more on offense in 2002? Because very clear that this defense was very, very talented. So you probably could have gotten by if you took away a few more defensive snaps for Terrence Newman and gave him more time on offense. Or as Travis Hunter just went out and proved, like, elite corners in college football, if they've got the ability to play receiver, they can handle it. Because you're looking at, you know, they said on there, K-State is only a couple plays away from being undefeated, and you say two losses, how can that be? It's true with 2002. They lost by 4 to Colorado and by 3 to Texas. A Terrence Newman at some point in there is probably good enough if he's on offense to help you in at least one of those games, if not both of them. I think that's one where you look back now, especially in this era after seeing what Travis Hunter just did, where you probably say to yourself, man, well, they should have used him a little bit more on offense.
That is 100% the what if of this season, game, anything, because clearly Terrence Newman was good enough to play offense. Like, he made some special plays in this game, and it didn't even need to be like a ton of plays throughout the season even to get Newman on the field more, but just like 10 or so plays on offense per game and take away a few defensive snaps, I think that they would have been better off, especially because, you know, I talked a little bit about, like, the receivers in this era were good, but not great. Like, K-State is probably better off if Terrence Newman is getting more snaps on offense than, like, having Taco Wallace out there, probably.
Wow. Okay. Well, then you need to go after Taco. Do you have an underrated player or a random player from this game? I don't really know that I could come up with good options for this one that popped up, because the only guy that I knew for Arizona State was Terrell Suggs.
Well, I put him as the random player.
He's like not random necessarily, no. But yeah.
But like it was fun to see him in college. He was a freaking monster in this game.
Yeah, I would say I didn't realize this was the era he was there. So you turn it on and just go, oh, okay, Terrell Suggs is playing in this game.
Yeah, and then for underrated player,
Chiefs legend Terrell Suggs.
For the underrated player, I put your guy Bobby Walker. I felt like he was everywhere on defense. Like him, he was probably the guy that stood out the most to me defensively throughout the game, because it felt like he was always near the ball.
Well, in his pick, he just looked like a center fielder. He looked like Willie Mays tracking it down out there, just a little floated up to him.
Got a little help from the Arizona State guy pulling his hammy too.
Yeah. Notable moments from the broadcast. You mentioned is what age poorly, the San Diego Chargers in attendance. Not just them being there because they're not in San Diego anymore. What the hell is Doug Flutie wearing? Like, what is this style here? The backward hats. Like, I think Doug Flutie, who's what, 5'1", is wearing a 5XL baseball jersey, and they're all eating, it looks like, dilly bars from Dairy Queen up in the suite. This was fashion right here. Also a notable broadcast moment. That was one I had.
Colin Cowherd would not like that the Chargers are backwards hat guys.
No, not at all. And then we mentioned this one earlier because I didn't even notice it in the starting lineups graphic. That is not Darren Sproles. Not at all. They kept flashing it up there. I would love for somebody to tell me who that is based off of, like, if you can recognize the face, because I do not know. But I do know it's not Darren Sproles. I don't think Darren Sproles got that much of a facial change from 2002 to 2003 and then how he's looked from basically every time since then. But yeah, Darren Sproles.
No. I have down the whole bowl week intro was phenomenal.
It was great.
As well as the old ESPN college football intro. Both of those two were fun. Now that you brought up that Sproles picture, I still am just fascinated by who that is. The other thing that I have as like the notable moments it wasn't even just like the picture of Darren Sproles, but how weird those pictures were just in general.
Like why is Travis Wilson so different from everybody else's? And like, they just took it last second.
Yeah. Like Travis Wilson is in a suit and his, that every other player is in jersey.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure.
You know, like you can go back to the offensive line one. And we also got Thomas Barnett is wearing glasses in his.
Oh, what's wrong with wearing glasses, Drew?
I'm just kind of confused about where we got these pictures from.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to hate on it. It's a sophisticated look. There you go. We end it now with our game score here. How would you rate this game, Drew?
I feel like people aren't going to like what I do here. This is like a 6.7, 6.8 for me. The first and third quarters were horrible. Like there was no real flow to the game at all. This game score also, we talked a little bit about in the Nebraska game, like K-State should have won by more. And in the Texas game in 06, K-State probably should have won by more. This game gets dinged a little bit for me because of how good this 0-2 team was. This was probably like their C-minus D kind of performance and still won. But because of that, like if you run this back, and K-State plays this Arizona State team like 10 times, I think that K-State wins by 17 or more, probably 8 of them. Like everything that could go wrong for K-State went wrong, and they still found a way to win, which again shows how good the 0-2 team was, but also is why I'm holding them to a high standard when I watch this game and I'm like, they didn't really play that well.
Well, and that's what's so weird is you go and look at this team. They only played four games this entire season that were decided by less than 10 points. Actually, you could chop that down a little bit and say less than like, I'm trying to find their closest, but like less than 34 points in this. The win against USC 27-20, the loss to Colorado by 4, the loss to Texas by 3, and then this game against Arizona State. But every other game, they beat Mizzou 38-0. They beat Nebraska 49-13. They beat Iowa State 58-7. KU 64-0. That's the that's one of the more fun iconic pictures there in this rivalry. 44-10 against Baylor. 44-9 against Oklahoma State. 63-13 against Eastern Illinois. I believe that would be Tony Romo, Eastern Illinois. 68-0 over UL Monroe, and then 48-3 over Western Kentucky. So, like, this was kind of an oddity for them. They played 13 games this season, and 9 of them weren't contests at all. 4 of them were close games. So, yes, you're probably right that they do just roll away from Arizona State if they played again. I gave this a 7.9. I think we have to era adjust a little bit and realize that some of the offensive philosophy leads to how it plays out. But you got enough scoring. You got some big plays in this one. And that's such an exciting way to cap off your season. Like you were trailing, you come back, you score a lot in the fourth quarter. And, you know, with like a minute left, you make this drive, you score. I think that's why I bump it up a little bit. It's a fun game to look back and watch. And I, you know, if it's close late and you make big plays happen, that's a good game to take in. So I gave it a 7.9.
I think that's fair. I think that I'm just too hung up on this team, like just beat the crap out of teams and to see them not do that. And to see like the mistakes that they made, like Darren Sproles rarely fumbles in this game. Mm-hmm. L. Roberson has a really bad fumble in this game as well.
We talked about in the Nebraska game, king of the late pitch, and it burnt him in this game with that fumble.
Yes. And to like see all that kind of play out, like I think that I'm probably being a little bit too harsh, but it's because of the standard that they had, because they rolled teams in this season. And to see them not roll an Arizona State team who wasn't that great kind of knocks their score down a little bit for me.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. We will see the 2002 team one more time this season, because the final episode of this era of KSO Classic, we will do before we go to Ireland, and it will be the 2002 Iowa State game, the Bobby Walker game, as K-State obliterates Seneca Wallace and the Cyclones on TBS's Big Play Saturday night. That'll be a fun one to go back and watch, because that is just a total domination, like you're talking about with this team. As for what is on the horizon next week for KSO Classic, we are going to fast forward about 8 years from this point. Crazy to think that you only have to go 8 years down the road and get to this scenario. K-State lived a lifetime of football from 2002 to 2010. We are going to take a look at Daniel Thomas running all over UCLA in the season opener in 2010. I was there, sweat my butt off on the very top row of the east side of Bill Snyder Family Stadium, but it's one of my more favorite memories that I possess of going to a K-State game when I was younger. And it was a big day for Darren Sproles. So that'll be a fun one to look back on when we get to it next week. And then still down the road, we're going to talk about just the 2011 football season as a whole, because there's close game after close game in there. The 93 Copper Bowl, Drew and I will watch for the first time. That will be a part of our double feature before we head off to Ireland. And then we have one open date right now that I have to determine how we're going to fill it, because I was going to do it with another basketball game. I think we've determined that basketball maybe doesn't work the best for this format. And also there's just not enough full basketball games on there. So we're going to have to find another football game to maybe squeeze into this and kind of evaluate. So we'll pick that out. We'll figure it out down the road. But next week, Daniel Thomas and K-State against UCLA in the 2010 season opener. But for today, that's Drew Galloway. I'm Mason Vo. Thanks for watching and listening to K-State Online. If you want more coverage of the Cats, current day Cats, head over to On3, find kstateonline.com, and we will get you covered there. You can get your first week for just $1. So we are out of here, and we will talk to you again on Monday.